Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2008 Home Education Conference held in Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Children have such a unique perspective on life and the world. On Mother's Day in our primary, the children made special Mother's Day cards for their mothers. They colored a picture on the outside, and on the inside they were asked to answer certain questions. One of those questions was, "How tall is your mother?" The answer to that question was very unique. One little child said, 1 foot, totally, 1 foot. And the other one said, 7 feet, 11 inches. Another question that they were asked was, what is your mother really good at doing? That was an interesting question. I just chuckled at their answers, but one I liked particularly was, she's really good at vacuuming. And then this next question, if your mother could go on a trip anywhere in the world, where would she like to go? And one little girl in the front row, 3 and 4 year old, said, to Walmart. Now, my son Hiram is 6, and he answered that question, and he said, my mother would really like to go to Virginia. He knew of my upcoming trip to Virginia. In fact, my whole family has been planning, all the kids, the 7 children and my husband, for weeks and weeks about all the fun they're going to have while mom is gone. Until I thought, gosh, maybe I should just stay home. It sounds like too much fun. And one of my sons said, can't wait till you go to Virginia. And another one said, hope you have fun in Virginia. And I responded, I hope you have fun in Utah. And he giggled. He thought that was pretty funny. I am glad to be here, particularly because of my adventures in traveling last night when everybody else was getting scheduled to fly into their place today, and I'm so glad that I made it. This is going to be fun over the next few days as we learn together, as we feel the Spirit leading and guiding us, meeting new friends and having new associations. I promise you that the Spirit will be here. I have felt it as I have prepared. I haven't felt quite like this before as I've prepared to speak, but I have felt the promptings of the Spirit as I've prepared, and so I kind of am really expecting to see these wonderful people and have some wonderful experiences over the next few days. So keeping with this idea that children have a unique perspective, they have the ability to teach us about who we are as parents, or perhaps who we need to be. Let me share 2 small stories to illustrate this. About 2.5 years ago, we blessed our 7th child. And on the day that she was blessed, it didn't happen to be a fast Sunday, but I was sitting on the front pew, balancing her like this as the speaker was speaking. Behind me, several rows, was a young mother, also with a very little newborn infant and a 2-year-old. And I could feel the struggle that was going on back there, and pretty soon this little 2-year-old ventured forth, all boldly, this little boy, and he's just walking forward out into the aisle and up towards the stand. And he ventured up and got to the stairs and then got a little worried, turned around and said, "Where's Mom? Where's Mom?" And he went toddling back to his mom. A few minutes later, I heard the same struggle going on, you know, rummage the diaper bag, anything that would keep that little guy there. Pretty soon he sallied forth. And this time he got up to the 2nd stair, got a little nervous and said, "Where's Mom? Where's Mom?" Turned around and went back. Okay, so this quiet for a little while, and this mom is just desperate back there. You can feel that she's trying to keep him there. Pretty soon he struggles, gets free. He's got 2 pink medicine bottles under each arm, you know, remnants of her struggle to keep him there. And he ventures up, and this time he makes it all the way to the top, and he's on the stand. And he begins to get really nervous. "Where's Mom? Where's Mom?" And the counselor, trying to help him, beckons to him to come over. But little boy is not really sure, and pretty soon the counselor, with his long arms, just reaches out and plops him on his lap. Now, this did not help the little boy at all. "Where's Mom? Where's Mom?" And that's what happened. The bishop was his grandfather, so the bishop plopped him on his lap, thinking that maybe that would be helpful. This did not help at all. "Where's Mom? Where's Mom?" And he finally squirmed out of his grandfather's arms and went to the top of the stand, looked into the audience, saw his mother, his eyes lit up, and he went toddling back to his mom. It matters where mom is. It also matters where dads are and where dad is, and grandpa and grandma. However, this little toddler was young enough that it was mom he needed. But there will come a day and a time when he will search out dad, because dad will know the answers to his questions. And this little experience happened in my home a couple of years ago. My six-year-old went searching out his dad with an important question. He said, "Dad, you'll know this because you're an attorney." And then he said, "How do airplanes fly?" Now, what airplanes have to do with being an attorney, I don't know. But that little boy knew that dad would have the answer, and that was important for him to know. Now, there will be times when children, some will come more often than others, will go to dad asking, and they will want answers to questions that are much deeper than how airplanes fly. That is really important to a six-year-old. They'll want to know how to find the answers to life's deepest questions. They'll need to know how to do that for themselves, and they'll go to dad looking for that. Yes, it matters where mom is, and it matters what dad knows. Dads need to know. David O. McKay said, "If I were asked to name the world's greatest need, I should say unhesitatingly, first, wise mothers, and second, exemplary fathers." It is wise mothers and exemplary fathers who can make the most significant change this world will ever know and this world needs. So what I want to focus on today is, what does it mean to be a wise mother or an exemplary father? Now, for our purposes, I think that wise and exemplary in this situation really do meld, and they're really one thing. So we're going to talk about what it is to be a wise mother or a wise father. To answer this question, we need to understand what is wisdom and what it is not. It's not obtained by our own power or our own ingenuity. It's not purchased. It doesn't come with straight A's or degrees. It's not merely an accumulation of knowledge. And it doesn't come necessarily with gray hair or age. Wisdom is an attribute of deity in whom it is found in its fullness and perfection. It's an attribute of God. In Alma 26:35, it says, "For he has all power, all wisdom, all understanding. He comprehendeth all things, and he is a merciful being." Another thing about wisdom is that wisdom is a gift of God. It's a gift of the Spirit and comes from God by revelation. James 1:5 says, "If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him." Another thing about wisdom is that the path of wisdom is the path of obedience. God gives wisdom to those who live in obedience to true principles and who seek to know and obey God's will for them. So to the extent that we seek after truth and align ourselves to truth is to the extent that we are given wisdom by God. Helaman counseled his son. He said, "Oh, remember, my son, and learn wisdom in thy youth. Yea, learn in thy youth to keep the commandments of God." Obedience is key to growing in wisdom. The Lord's promise to those who obey is that their wisdom shall be great and their understanding reach to heaven. It's important to grow in wisdom. To grow in wisdom, we must walk the path or take a journey, similar to the Liahona. And I'm going to read from Alma 37, which I forgot to put in my notes. I'm just going to paraphrase it. it talks about right after Alma counsels with his son to learn wisdom and keep the commandments, he also tells him to counsel with the Lord in all things, to pray about everything. And then he goes on to talk about the Liahona, about the journey that their forefathers made and how the Liahona worked, and how it worked very simply and miraculously by their faith. But that because the process was so simple, oftentimes they neglected to use it, and then they stopped and did not progress in their journey. So we're going to talk today about this journey. In fact, my definition of real education is really the journey or the path or the process of opening ourselves to God's gift of wisdom. That real education is growing in wisdom, little bit by little bit, line upon line. The passage about the Liahona suggests a few things. It suggests, first of all, there's a journey involved. Second of all, there's more than one path, but really only one right way, one right path that will take you in the right direction. And the other thing it suggests is that it's simple, but because of its simplicity, many ignore it. Now, what I'm going to talk about for the rest of our hour here today and how it applies to TJ Ed and homeschooling, they're things that are not new to any of us. They're familiar already. But what I ask you to do and invite you to do is to see what the application is for us as parents, homeschool parents, and how it applies to TJ Ed parents specifically. So we're going to talk about the path of wisdom. It's very simple, but the results are miraculous, just as it says in Alma. Short, nothing short of miraculous. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to draw this up here. I can draw it pretty easily. What we have here is the path of wisdom, okay? It's what I see in my brain. So bear with me as I explain. The path of wisdom, like I said, is a path of obedience. So in here, we have these are true principles. These are the basic and general commandments or truths that God has revealed to us to live by. In here, we have specific, it's God's specific will for us. Let me distinguish between the two. These, God's specific will for us individually, always fall within the true principles. So as we obey true principles, those are like love one another, you know, pay your tithing, serve, help the poor. I'm kind of going blank, but, you know, don't kill, don't steal, all of those things. So in here is God's specific will for you. So the commandment is to love and serve one another. But specifically, you and I will receive inspiration about who and where and when. And obeying that inspiration, that specific will, helps us walk along the path of wisdom. Okay, so then we have out here the eight steps of the path, and that's what we're going to go ahead and do right now. And I'm not going to write those up. I'm just going to tell you what those are as we move along the path of wisdom. The first one is study. This is a quest to discover true principles by which we can govern our lives. And it's our quest to align ourselves with those specific principles and God's specific will for us. Scriptures and classics. How many of you have heard, you've heard the term classic, great literature, great art, all of the best in all of the different fields. These help us to align ourselves with truth. But I want to broaden my definition of study to mean situations, experiences, people, nature, issues that come up, relationships, failures, thoughts, feelings, all that comes to us in a day. This is what I define as things we can study. Of course, classics and scriptures are going to be the springboard from which we study all else. And it's not just study or just reading, it's seeking. In DNC 88:118, it says, "Seek ye diligently out of the best books, yea, seek out of the best books words of wisdom. Seek learning by study and also by faith. Seek implies something very important. It applies, first of all, that there's something to be found. Second of all, it's an action, it's a verb. And third, it implies or suggests the kind of attitude or heart of the person who is seeking. They really want to know. You've lost your keys before, or a child, or anything else, and you know that feeling of really seeking because you want to find that item. And this is the kind of study that we need, that diligence, that intensity that we really want to find. And the more we study, the more we find, and the whole purpose of study is to hear God's voice speaking to us, understand His specific will to us in our lives. And when we study, we are basically communicating to God, I'm here. I want to learn. Please speak to me. Not just Scripture. Scripture's the base and the foundation, but also from the classics, all the greatest minds throughout all history. Again, D&C in another 88 in another section talks about all of the various things we should study, things that were, things that are to come to pass, things in the heavens and underneath and of the earth, so that we can be prepared when our mission comes to serve. Interestingly enough, also, I want to talk a little bit more about this word seek. In Doctrine and Covenants, section 6-7, it says, seek not for riches, but for wisdom. And behold, the mysteries of God shall be unfolded unto you. And then shall you be made rich. He that hath eternal life is rich. In Alma 39:14, it says, seek not after riches, nor for the vain things of the world. For behold, you cannot carry them with you. The interesting thing is about the education system of our country, of our society, the whole purpose is to get a job and to earn money. That's not the purpose of education the way God sees it. At least that's my belief. He wants us to get wisdom. That is education. Section 68:31 says that the Lord is not well pleased with the inhabitants in Zion, for there are idlers among them, and their children are also growing up in wickedness. They also seek not earnestly the riches of eternity, but their eyes are full of greed. Interesting scriptures about seeking and seeking for the right things. Seek earnestly, diligently, actively. We seek through study. Again, the whole point of study is to help us to hear God's voice and to hear His specific will for us. And if study is well done, it brings us to number 2 on our path of wisdom. It brings us to recognize our lack of wisdom, what we don't know. You know, those pressing, I really need to know type of questions. The interesting thing is that I've found parenthood to be a crash course in seeking wisdom, or at least coming to know that I really don't know. I remember when my first was born, I was raised in a family of 8, and I was the third, so I was basically a second mom to all those younger brothers and sister. So when it came time for me to have babies, I thought, I can do this. I mean, I know how to take care of a baby, and I know how to take care of a toddler. I can do this. This is great. So I was pretty confident, and 2 weeks into it, my baby started having these really long crying episodes from about 3 in the afternoon until about 9 or 10 at night, you know, the colic thing. And we tried everything. You know, you go through, you rock him, you change him, you feed him, you burp him, you take him outside, you put him in the bathtub, everything. And still he would be crying and screaming until he finally decided it was time to settle down and go to sleep. That shook my confidence a little bit. But by the time he was 8 or 9 months old, my confidence had been shaken several times over and over again. In fact, by the time my second was born, my confidence had probably been cut like at least in half, if not completely 3/4, you know, down to almost nothing. And with each child, I've noticed that my confidence in my own ability to really know what needed to be done has gone down. Gratefully, my confidence in the Lord has gone up. That if I recognize my lack of wisdom and ask, that He will answer and He will show me what I need to do. So parenthood is that great crash course in growing in wisdom. With Thomas Jefferson education, those of you who may be starting may not even know what I'm really talking about when I say that, and hopefully today will give you an idea of what that means. But and even with just homeschool and parenting, but you have questions like, well, how do I structure the day so that we learn something and the day isn't just frittered away in mindless stuff? Or how can I inspire this child to want to fill in the blank? How do I run my home with simplicity? Or how do I get the study that I know I really need? Lots of questions like these. The pressing need to know and the recognizing that I don't know is really an important step in the path of wisdom. One of the things that I came across, well, I have come across over the 18 years of motherhood that I've been involved with is that, I tried everything in regards to organizing my home and chores systems and teaching my children how to work. And it just seemed like I tried one thing and then the next thing and then the next thing and then the next thing. I'd get a great idea and my kids would go, oh no, not another one. You know, we'd switch this system and go to a different one. This went on for a long time until probably 3 years ago. And finally, I said, you know what? I don't know how to do this. And I went to God and asked Him, please, I don't know how to do this. Which, of course, is the third step, to ask God. And then I used that example throughout the steps. But I had to come to the place where I had exhausted my wisdom, if you could call it wisdom, and all of my ideas before I really said, I don't know how, but I want to have order in my home. I want my children to learn to work and have responsibility. How do I do this? So step number three is to ask God. Now this one is obvious. Ask the one who knows, right? Totally obvious. Yet it's not our inclination to ask. When we've got that pressing need to know, oftentimes we go to our neighbor or to our mom or to our sister, and we ask them, and we get all kinds of great advice. But whether or not that advice is right for our family and will work is a totally different situation. So in order to get God's wisdom, we need to ask Him. Now, I've had situations where I've thought to go to somebody and talk to them, but have first asked God what to do. Sometimes the answer has been to actually go and talk to that person that I had thought to talk to. But the important point is to ask God and seek what He wants and seek His wisdom. There's a couple of things that are really important when we ask God. First of all, it needs to be specific. Get really specific in your asking. And I know that I can't do that late at night when I'm really tired. I do it best when I'm fresh, have had some time to think and to ponder. But get specific. Another thing that's helpful is to use a notebook where you can ask and write your questions, where you can also write any inspiration that comes to you about those questions. And the third thing is go to a closet, literally a closet if you have one, regularly, meaning like Nephi, go to a mount oft, and God will show you and teach you great things, like Nephi says. It's important to understand with this asking that God works with our desires. It says in the scriptures over and over again that He will work with our desires. And if we have a desire to have an organized home or inspire a child, I'm positive He will answer us. Those are healthy, righteous desires. Step number four is to listen, to watch, to wait. Be still, be open, and importantly, be patient. Oh, darn, I left something back there that I needed for a quote. I had a quote here by Ardith Kapp that basically says that that she has pondered the idea that if we were still and quiet, how much more open we would be to what God has to say. Now, with that organization in my home, I asked. The answer didn't come immediately. And I kind of felt like, well, I'm just going to put it kind of on the burner and we'll maintain our house as best we can. We'll let it simmer back there. And months went by. And then I was in a class. It happened to be Diane Jepson's class. We were talking about home organization and chores. And I liked the systems that were being talked about, but none of them seemed to really give me the gumption to go try another one yet in my home. And so I just didn't do really anything except maintain until one day we were visiting with friends, having dinner at their home, and I noticed on the refrigerator this 8.5 by 11 sheet that had been, it was a computerized chore chart. I was looking at it and thinking, wow, look at this. And I asked my friend to come over and explain it to me. In that moment, I just kind of got this tap on the shoulder that said, notice this. This will work. It's not the way exactly that it'll work in your home, but this idea will work in your home. We've now had that system up and running for 2.5 years, and we kind of tweak it every once in a while, and I have to work it, but it's brought order to my home. But it took a while before the answer came, and I could tell you what it is, but it won't work in your home. It really won't. So it might, but you'd have to tweak it for you. I need to tell this. I call it the parable of the pencil. About a month ago, I like to run, and I was out running one morning. I also like to write, and had been in the process of writing an article. And while I was running, the words just started to flow, and the ideas started to come. And I thought, oh, if only I had a pencil and a piece of paper to write this down, or a tape recorder or something. So I finished my run and I went home and I promised myself that I would never go running again without a little notebook and a pencil. So the next time I went running, I grabbed a little notebook, grabbed a pencil, sharpened that pencil, stuck it in my notebook, and off I went running. It's okay, I'm ready. Nothing. I kept running, got to a mile marker, and finally something came. It was a very simple, just little thought, an idea of something I needed to do. So I went to pull out my pencil, and the pencil lead was broken. I said, no, this can't happen. And as I continued running, and I could remember that one thought, though, I can remember that, that's good. And I kept saying it over and over again, gotta remember. And then I also started to offer a simple prayer. Help me to find a pencil or a pen along the side of the road. I wanna remember what you have to tell me and the inspiration that comes to me. Well, as I was running, the thought occurred to me to visit a sister in our ward that lived on that street. I had had the same idea a few days earlier when I had been running the first time. She had broken both arms, fell off a horse and broke both arms, and I had had the thought to stop and visit her, but I thought, on that first day, I thought, ah, she wouldn't want me to come, da-da-da-da. You know, I rationalized it right away. This time the thought came and I said, okay, I'm stopping. So I got to her house and I stopped and we had a very nice visit. The connection that was made was beautiful. I needed it probably more than she needed it. And we talked. And then I said, do you have a pencil I could have? And she went to her drawer and pulled out this big wad of pencils and brought out this brand new pencil. We don't have nice wads of pencils at my house. But she's a single woman, lives by herself, so she could have nice wads of pencils at her house. Anyway, and I left her home. And as I got out to the street, ideas started to flow, and I started to write them down. And it was a lot about the visit that we had just had. And the parable of the pencil, what I want to share from that is this. God is ready to talk to us, and we need to have the pencil ready. How his wisdom comes to us, it will come in all different ways. It came that day through my visit with that sister. 2 days earlier, it came through just a whole bunch of ideas that were running through my head. How much easier and more joyful our lives would be if we would wait for these gentle whisperings and be ready to write them down, not only on a piece of paper, but in our hearts, instead of forcing so much of what we do. The answers will come, and they will come at the right time. So be patient and be willing to wait for him. I remember when we were 4 years into our homeschool that I got really burned out. We were doing it conveyor belt style like I had known in public school. My kids weren't happy and neither was I, and I knew that if I didn't make a change that I could not continue homeschooling them. and that I would need to send them to public school or find some other option. And I began to pray for help and for an answer. That was in the fall, and it wasn't until the spring at a UHEA convention in Utah that I found Thomas Jefferson Education, which brought life back to our home and to our and was the answer that I needed. So I had to kind of hang on until I got more of the answer. And when you get bottleneck times where things are really, really overwhelming and you really can't see clearly what in the world to do, I'll give you one question that can open the door. At least it helps me. And you can go to God and ask, what one thing can I do right now to improve the situation? What one thing can I do, whether it's to improve your marriage, to help with a relationship with a child, whatever, one thing in whatever situation you're overwhelmed with. Step number 5 is to act on what God has given. Seems reasonable enough. This is the moment of truth. It's the time you test your mettle and your heart. In the Bible, we read of Naaman, who wanted to be cured of his leprosy and then was told to go wash in the river. Yes, he wanted to be cured of leprosy, but no, he didn't want to wash. And I don't want to do that. Oftentimes the answer comes and we go, but I don't want that. You know what it's like. And our mind, but acting on what is given is the crucial point in the path of wisdom. It means either continuing and growing in wisdom or stopping in that growth. Now, our minds will want to rationalize and want to say and find reasons for not doing and not following what is given to us. But to grow in wisdom, we have to act. I remember specifically that I had some certain questions that I was working with, had to do with a presentation that I was working on for a conference, and I was stuck. I didn't know what to do. And I knelt down and asked that one question, what one thing can I do? And the thought occurred to me to call, many of you might know, Jody Palmer. So I thought, okay, I don't really know Jody Palmer really well. She doesn't really want to talk to me. Why would she want to listen to what I have to say? She's probably busy with da-da-da-da. But I gumptioned up enough courage, and I called her. I had sweaty palms and got all, it's like all nervous, and I'm talking to her. And in the course of our conversation, my answer came. You have to follow and have to act. Step number 6, this is the thing that just comes because you followed all the way 1 through 5. If you fully take those first 5 steps, what happens is transformation. We grow in wisdom and understanding. I consider this one of the most beautiful parts of the atonement of Jesus Christ and how he works with us and teaches us and helps us to become more like him. This human growth and this transformation into becoming all that God wants us to become. This is a small miracle, one at a time. Step number 7 is to give thanks, recognizing where it came from in the first place, that it wasn't because of our strength, our brawn, our smarts, or whatever, but it was God's wisdom and God's love that brought us to this point. We just opened to it and aligned ourselves with it. Gratitude is very much part of this process. Now there's step number 8, and that's to serve and to share and to teach what you've become and what you've learned through this process. That's the whole point of walking the path of wisdom in the first place, to teach, to serve, and to share what we learn and what we become. So walking this path is transformational. These are the 8 steps. And what I'd like to do now is share 2 experiences that I've had walking this path and how it relates to my homeschool and working with a couple of my children. First of all, last year my son was 17, and we had driven into Salt Lake, which is a 30-minute drive from our house, and he had gone to his piano lesson, and we were on our way home. And as we were driving home, he started talking to me, and he said, "Mom," he said, "it's so hard for me to talk when I'm around other people. I just always labor over what I'm going to say, and when I'm in a group of people, and then I say something, then I think about it and think about it and agonize with it. Did I say the right thing? Did I say it in the right way? And I just have a hard time. Now, my son has always been a quiet, soft-spoken child and young man of few words. It's kind of who he is. It's a beautiful attribute. But he was just agonizing. The evening before, he'd been at a bishop's fireside, and he had had an experience where he'd felt so uncomfortable when he'd said something. So our conversation ended, and he fell asleep, and I continued to drive, and I'm agonizing for him. I thought, what can I do? Of course, this is because we homeschooled, right, that he's in this situation. And I began to agonize that it was my fault and that we've done something totally wrong. And I was really feeling bad. I said, I've got to find the answer. Is it it's counseling, or it's support group, or it's Taekwondo, or it's I've got to just enroll him in public school so we can get more socialization and more opportunity to talk. So I just determined on the way home that I would seek the answer. And in prayer the next morning, when I could find a quiet moment, actually, by the time I was ready to pray, there were about four or five children in the front room after my study. So I did go to my closet, and I took in my notebook, and I knelt, and I was open to the answer that would come. But in my mind, I thought it was like I was going to have to enroll him somewhere in some kind of program. And I asked, what can I do? And the answer that came was, there's nothing wrong with your son. Teach him to whom he may turn to make weaknesses strengths. That's God's wisdom. Had I followed my inclinations, nothing of the sort would have happened. That's what turning to God and seeking his wisdom can do for us, and what it did for me and my son. Another experience, one family night, my husband had the children draw or write their dreams for their future. So my 15-year-old daughter is very artistic and also very literary and also likes to perform a lot. So she drew all of hers, even though she could have very well written it out. And she drew six frames. And in each one of those frames, it showed her performing in a different way, performing her violin, a ballroom dance, acting, singing, you know, all of these things. And as I looked at that, I was pretty tired that night anyway, but I looked at that and I just agonized. I thought, I have seven children. My time is limited and split in seven different directions. Our funds, you know, go seven, eight, nine different directions. I thought, how can I ever support her in these dreams? How do I do that? Again, I went to God and asked, how? What do I do? And this was the answer. Teach her that though she may perform, and though that is a worthy thing, teach her that it's more important, the tiny acts of service that she does in the home and in small situations are more important than standing in front of large audiences. Very interesting distinction, and that's something I could do right then to work with on her. She probably will perform in her future years and has already. Now, my son had just turned 18, and I can see this process all the way along. The key points, the different answers, not on a daily basis, you know, the huge life things, but I can see the process. Now, let's talk about what it means to us as Thomas Jefferson Education parents or wannabes or, you know, trying to live these principles of leadership education. Walking the path of wisdom, in my mind, is truly leadership education. You take these eight steps and you apply them to the principles of a Thomas Jefferson education, and you have leadership education for Latter-day Saints. One of the biggest questions that I'm asked when I teach Thomas Jefferson education principles, and one that most other teachers are asked, is, I love the principles, but how do you do it? Not if you've ever had that question. Yeah, how do you do it? Well, whatever your question might be, how to inspire? Is it right to require anything? How do I structure my home so this works? What is needed? What if my spouse doesn't go along with it? How do I find a mentor? How do I find time to study? All of the different questions. If you take those and apply them to the path of wisdom, you will find and know what is right for you and for your family. I believe that leadership education, coupled with the following the path of wisdom like this, is what God needs us to do to prepare to serve in the way He needs us to serve. And this is the process that we need to teach and model our children. I think that if there was one thing that I could have, only one thing that I could have my children have when they left my home, it would be this process of how to grow in wisdom. Now, children will call for mom whenever they come home. You know how it goes. They run in from playing, "Mom, Mom," and they will call and they will call until they find mom, no matter where she is. And now, for me, I even have a cell phone, and they find me, "Mom." I have an 8-year-old that calls me constantly whenever I'm out of the home. That's what I have the phone for. But they children will search for mom, even when they come home. "Mom, where's mom?" Where they find her matters. If they find her walking the path of wisdom, she will be able to teach and lead them to walk it as well. Their experience with mom will have a different feeling, a different meaning, a different essence. Dad needs to know where to find the answers to life's deepest questions, because children will seek him out, searching for their own answers to life's deepest questions. By exemplifying this process, dads who walk the path of wisdom can teach them how to grow in wisdom too, how to find those answers. David O. McKay said, "If I were asked to name the world's greatest need, I should say unhesitatingly, first, wise mothers, and second, exemplary fathers." It matters where mom is. It matters what dad knows. Let's be mothers and fathers who walk the path of wisdom and who lead our children to walk it as well. This is the world's greatest need, and we can fill it. I bear testimony of this. In the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
LDS Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.